time to take a listen to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 by Island, the stockist of Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local gifts, art and clothing. On Saturday the 13th of November, Jan Scott talked to Rob Meredith from Peacock Sky. She got to know Dom McKenzie, a new local board member, and she talked to Marta Fish from Living Without Violence.
And it's my pleasure to introduce our special guest, Rob Meredith from Peacock Sky. Welcome, Rob.
Thanks, Jan.
Now, I don't know if it's my earphones or if I haven't pushed the right button, but I hope we're on air. Yeah, thanks for coming, Rob. Now, Peacock Sky has opened fairly recently, hasn't it?
Well, the tasting room only opened earlier this year in April, but the vineyard itself has been there for over 10 years. In fact, it was planted in 1999.
Did you plant it?
No, the previous owners put the vineyard in place, and we purchased the property towards the end of 2008.
Okay, and where did you come from?
Well, at the time, my partner and I, Connie, were living in Phoenix, Arizona. And we'd been living there for a number of years. We've travelled fairly widely. I'm actually a Brit. Connie's a Canadian from Montreal. I'm from London. And we met while living in Toronto, Canada. After a while living there, we moved down to the US for business reasons. And we'd been living in Phoenix. We lived there a total of 16 years.
Okay, what were you doing over there? Were you doing viticultural work or something different?
No, actually we came from quite a different background. Connie and I have both been involved in the high technology industry for a number of years, all our careers really. She's been on the sales and marketing side and I'd been on the technical and operations side of things.
So what got you into viticulture?
Well, part of Connie's family history, her family background is Italian, and she's always been close to wine in a number of different ways. And when we began talking about a change of pace and possibly an early retirement in a way, although that hasn't worked out very well so far, we talked about what we'd like to do. And one of the ideas that came up very strongly in our discussions was acquiring a small vineyard and becoming viticulturalists and working in that industry.
Right, and what brought you to Waiheke?
Well, there are so many things to love about Waiheke. The island climate, the scenery, the topography, the people, just the general laid-back attitude of the place is so charming. And its proximity to Auckland, of course, is another bonus. If you do need your fix of the big city, it's a very short ferry ride away.
Right, so you didn't consider going anywhere else in New Zealand?
Well, we did for a while. We initially started looking for a property to buy in 2004, 2005, right after our first visit to New Zealand. But we did look in a few places. Funnily enough, we started looking here on Waiheke. Couldn't quite find the right property, so we began looking elsewhere in the Auckland vicinity, and we went as far afield as Warkworth, Mangaway, Kerikeri, down to Clevedon, and we looked everywhere, but we couldn't find anything that quite fit the bill. And then eventually, back in 2008, we were lucky enough through some real estate contacts of ours to eventually find the right property right back here on the island where we started.
And that is in only 10 years, isn't it?
That's right, yes.
Whereabouts are you?
We're up by the active airstrip, so right next to the airfield. We're fairly close to Ridgeview Vineyard, at the end of Trig Hill Road. If you go all the way up Trig Hill to the Trig Point and then continue just past that down the private road, you'll see our signs and the big entrance gate welcoming you.
Right, and your tasting room is open 7 days, is it?
Well, right now it's only open 4 days as we're getting into the season. We're open from Thursday through Sunday from 11 till 3.
Right, Thursday through to Sunday. Right, and you're in, you sell food as well, don't you?
Well, yes, it's part of our license. We need to have food available, and Connie has a background actually as a chef in a previous life. We Right. We owned a restaurant for a few years in Scottsdale, Arizona, part of the Phoenix metro area. And so Connie has actually run a restaurant, and I've helped out with that. And so she's brought some of those culinary skills to bear on our new enterprise.
Right. And what sort of food do you sell?
We sell a variety of different lunch platters. For example, a smoked salmon-based platter, a cheese-based platter with a variety of local cheeses, smoked mussels. We have olive selections. There's a variety of things for everybody's taste, I think.
Yeah, I went to a great function there Labor Weekend. Jazz, Briar Ross and the Jazz was
brilliant. That was a lot of fun, yes. That's our first time at trying a big event like that. And we had well over 100 people in attendance. And Briar and her musicians did a fantastic job. Everybody seemed to have such a great time. And the weather stayed with us, which was very lucky.
Sure did. Yeah. Okay, Rob, now let's get on to the wine side of things. Do you specialise in a particular variety of wine?
Yes, we're what you would call a Bordeaux-style vineyard. So we have four different grape varieties. Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot are the primary ones, and then Cabernet Franc and Malbec are the supporting players. And from that, we make a variety of different wines. We've tried to add a few things that the previous owners hadn't attempted because we wanted to open to the public and have a full range of wines for people to taste. So from our grapes, we make a delightful rosé, and in fact, we're going to be bottling our 2010 rosé very shortly, and we'll be launching that in the first weekend of December. So there'll be an event, there'll be ads in the local papers for everybody to see. We also, in 2009, our first vintage as owners, made two red wines, a Merlot Malbec blend and a Cabernet Sauvignon. We also, from a neighbouring Waiheke vineyard, bring in Chardonnay grapes and make a wonderful Chardonnay that's won a couple of awards. We won a medal down at the International Chardonnay Challenge. Tis Wine, an online review site, gave it very high marks and gave it the Consumer's Choice Award. We've also won an award for the Merlot Malbec, and we won a medal at the Romeo Brigato Conference for our Cabernet Sauvignon.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, great start. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the rosé. Rosé is probably not one of my favourite varieties, but I had rosé at that jazz afternoon, and it suited my palate nicely. It was not too sweet. It was just nice light summer drink.
Right, and part of the reason for that is because we're making wines in the style that not only suits the grapes that we can grow, but also suits our personal style. So Connie and I are not big fans of very sweet wines, and we think that something with just a touch of acid and a nice crisp dry finish goes much better with food, and that's the big focus of the tasting room. So I think the reason you might have liked our rosé is because it's a drier style, what some people say is more in the French style of rosé.
Right.
One of the things that we do at the tasting room, which is unique among Waiheke vineyards and I think possibly very, very rare or unique in New Zealand, is that with each different wine that you taste at Peacock Sky's tasting room, we give you a small complimentary food pairing. So you can just see how the food and the wine go together and what type of effect you can get.
That's a great idea. Who does your cooking there? Have you got a special chef, or does one of...
No, Connie, as I mentioned, Connie is a trained chef. She's been a great cook all her life. Recipes handed down from mama and grandmama and from the Italian family tradition, a lot of which weren't written down and were just measured in handfuls rather than fluid ounces. Yep. And so on. But she's got a long history of cooking and is always preparing the food herself.
Well, she's a busy lady.
She is indeed.
Yes. Now, do you make the wine on the island?
Yes, it's all made right here on Waiheke. We don't bring in grapes from off-island, and we don't ship our wine off the island to be made. We actually use David Evans as our winemaker. David, of course, owns Passage Rock and is probably the most highly awarded winemaker on the island at the moment. And so David's been doing a great job for us in making our wines. We have all our own barrels and our tanks, which reside down in Oropew with him.
Okay, that's an interesting one. It hadn't occurred to me that a winemaker might work for more than one winery.
Yeah.
So how would he get a special Peacock Sky wine as opposed to a Passage Rock wine?
Well, we keep our grapes completely separate from David's grapes, and the character of a wine is based on the grapes and also where the grapes are grown and the weather that you see. So even the same variety of grape grown on our particular site, what the French call terroir, would actually taste different from the same type of grape grown somewhere else on the island even.
That's interesting, isn't it? That you don't. I certainly wouldn't have thought there'd be a huge difference in the grapes growing on your vineyard as a few miles down the road.
Yes, it's astonishing what they call a microclimate, a more or less humidity, more or less heat, a little bit cooler in the evenings or maybe a little bit warmer, a little bit warmer during the day, maybe cooler. And the soil, of course, the soil content has an effect on this as well.
Right. You're on the southern side of Onitangi, aren't you?
Yes, we'd be just about 2 kilometres south of Onitangi Beach.
Right. So you're not on the north-facing... you don't have north-facing vines? Or?
Oh, yes. The vineyard covers quite a large ridge, so about half of it is sloping towards the north and the other half slopes away.
Okay, so how do the wines, the grapes vary from the ones on the north side and the ones on the south side?
Because of the amount of sun that they get, and also because of the shape of the terrain, they can get a different amount of moisture holding in the soil. You'll see variations in growth patterns quite strongly between the two different blocks. On average, they get the same climate because they're very, very close to each other, obviously, but you do see some differences in the canopy growth.
Okay, and you would blend those two together?
Yes, we'd put them all together in a single batch, yes.
Right. Now, one thing that I want to ask you, and it's going to sound like a dumb question, can you make a white wine out of red grapes?
Yes, you can actually, yes. One of the things that people do is, for a red wine to get its colour, you leave the juice in contact with the skins for a long time. The longer you leave the juice in contact with the skins, the more colour it's going to pick up from the red colour on the outside of the grapes. And in fact, it's not a stupid question. A lot of people wonder, how do you get a rosé wine? And there are a number of different ways of doing it, but it's not a mixture of red and white blended together. Our rosé is made from exactly the same grapes as the red wine would be made from, but we just don't leave it in contact with the skins. We bleed off the juice early and don't leave it in contact with the skins for as long. But you can make a white wine from red grapes. If you look at a lot of champagnes, for example, a biscuity coloured champagne, a light biscuit coloured champagne with barely any colour at all, the same colour as a Chardonnay, actually comprises quite a lot, in many cases, a lot of Pinot Noir grapes, as well as Chardonnay.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, it's the wine business is quite varied and fascinating. It's much much more complicated than one might think.
Yes, there are so many variables, and one of the things, the way it's different from some of the industries that Connie and I have worked in before is that it's much harder to plan certain things because you're so at the mercy of the weather.
Yes.
For example, you don't know when it's going to rain or how much it's going to rain, even if it's going to rain. Look at last summer.
Mm. Yeah, how did that affect your harvest?
Oh, it was quite an interesting effect. Because there was so little moisture, we had a generally lower yield in terms of the number of kilograms of grapes that we had. But those grapes came out very concentrated in flavour. And I think the 2010 vintage that we've just picked is going to be a fantastic year for Wahiki wine.
Great. What sort of wine are you going to be making out of this vintage?
Well, from what we've picked, we know what we have in barrels, but I can't tell you right now exactly how we're going to blend that wine to make the final product, because that's the final part of the process that we'll be doing probably around March next year, and we'll be getting together with David to sit down and try the different wines from the barrel and to try different blends of those wines together to see how we can enhance the flavours of one with the other. And until that process completes, I can't tell you exactly what whether we're going to have one, two or three different red wines, but we're going to come up with the best blend we can, but we won't know until March. That's one of the exciting things about this industry.
Yes.
You can't say for sure.
Yeah, that's amazing. Mm. Now, did you buy the property as an existing vineyard?
Yes. In fact, it was planted in 1999, and the previous owners had done a great job of looking after it, and what we wanted to do was find a property that had a good history, was a good place to grow grapes, but had some potential for development so we could put our own stamp on it and take it to the next level, really. Hmm. The previous owners had done their first vintage in 2002, and just on three-year-old vines, and they won an Air New Zealand silver medal for their reserve Merlot, which is astonishing for young vines like that. It's quite an achievement. So when we looked at that and looked at the rest of the property and how meticulously it had been cared for over the years, we knew that the potential was there. That was exactly what we needed.
So you've added your own, you've planted other grapes since then?
No, not yet. It's something that we can consider doing because there is room on the property to plant some more vines if we wanted to. But since we're just coming into our first full season with the tasting room open, we're going to wait and go through a full year and just see how things go and see what the demand is for the product and see how popular we are.
Mm, right. And you mentioned that the previous owners had their first vintage after 3 years. Mm. I think we usually think of vines being much older than that before they produce an award-winning wine.
Yes, normally they've matured a little bit more than that. So it was, I think, a testament to the care that they put into running the vineyard and also the terroir that we have there for the particular varietals that we're growing. That enabled that to happen.
Have you got a clay sort of soil there, or is it better than that? I know Rocky Bay's clay, and which is a bit tricky for a garden. But
yes, it's a little bit tricky for a vineyard as well. The clay soils, one of the disadvantages, if you like, is they tend to retain a lot of water, which isn't necessarily good for grapevines. So we manage that with physical ploughing that will take the water away and run the water away from the vineyard so it doesn't become waterlogged. So there are some challenges on Waiheke, depending on where you are exactly. Yeah, but
yeah, and I guess that being on tank water too makes another challenge of its own, isn't it?
It can be a challenge, yes, because obviously to keep the grapes in top quality, we're spraying quite a lot of water and nutrients onto the grapes, and that does take it out of your tank, even with a fairly large tank like we have. It's quite a lot of water to spray a 3-hectare vineyard.
Mm. Now, one thing that struck me when I went to the vineyard was your graphics, the logo, which... it looks like a butterfly, but is it a butterfly with a peacock sort of things in a way?
That's right. We wanted to, when we took over the property, we had to do a name change and rebranding because of a trademark issue with a South African vineyard. But we decided to come up with our own strong brand and a memorable image, something that was linked to nature, but also linked to the history of the property. And, of course, we do have peacocks living wild out on the property, walking around, just messing up our nets during harvest season. So we wanted to stay with the peacock theme. So Peacock Sky was the brand we created. But you're right, the butterfly logo, the wings are comprised of peacock feathers if you look closely at that graphic.
Mm. And you take that into the table number that you're given when you put your order in. It's not a number, it's like a mask.
Like a carnival mask.
Yes.
It's how
butterfly
we,
mask.
Right, that's how we keep track of who's ordered
colours.
What when we get busy.
It's great, yeah.
Orange mask, green mask, gold mask.
Yeah. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. So what for the future for Peacock Sky, where do you want to go from here?
Well, we're going to see how this first season goes. Because of the success of the event with Briar Ross and her group there, we're planning some more events that will involve music. We're very keen to do that. We are expanding the product line once again. We brought the vineyard from just doing reds to having a rosé and a chardonnay. And this vintage, we're doing another very exciting project. We're going to have bubbles. So we're going to be doing a full method process sparkling wine.
Right, and that's in production at the moment, isn't it?
It's in production. It's been resting quietly in bottles, undergoing secondary fermentation for a number of months now. And unfortunately, the process, the full method process, which gives you the best quality sparkling wines, it is very time-consuming. It does take a long while. So unfortunately, anybody listening, that product's probably not going to be available to drink for at least another year from now. So be patient, but I assure you it's going to be worth the wait.
Ah, well, we'll have to get you back this time next year for a progress report.
That'd be great, and I'll bring a bottle along.
Oh, sounds great. Thanks a lot, Rob. All the best.
Thanks, Jan.
I've been talking to Rob, the owner of Peacock Sky, which is in Trick Hill Road in Onitangi, and well worth a visit on a beautiful day like this. And this morning, we're going to have the pleasure of getting to know Don McKenzie a little bit better. As you know, Don has recently been elected to our first local board, Welcome, John.
Good morning, Jen. Hello. Nice to be here on a beautiful day. Great day for Jesse Dean, huh?
Oh, absolutely. Mm. It's a wonderful day for it. Now, Don's brought along some of his favourite music, and quite coincidentally, he's brought along a different version of Take Five than the one we listened to just a moment ago by Dave Brubeck. He's brought along a George Shearing one, which we'll be listening to a little later on. Now, Don, you're a physiotherapist. Is that right?
I'm a physiotherapist, and I qualified way back in 1963 when the world was a different place, I guess. But I was lucky enough to get a scholarship to go to England to train as a physiotherapist. And I had to do that because being a blind person, you can't usually train in the ordinary mainstream schools, but they're... it was at that stage a school run by the Commonwealth to take blind students from around the Commonwealth, South Africa, Australia, Canada. We had students from the West Indies, Turkey, and so on and so on and so on. We all clubbed together in this school where all the texts were in Braille on tape, and we had models for dissection and all that sort of stuff. So it was just a huge liberation, really, to be in a tertiary training institution where I didn't have to struggle to get information. Prior to that, I'd been at Auckland University doing a few papers, and those were the days... almost pre-tape recorders, at least the tape recorders that were about in those days were great, huge 7-inch reel things that you couldn't carry about. They weren't portable, so you couldn't take tape recorders into lectures to record lectures. And so university education was a real struggle, but it was hugely liberating, as I say, to go to this school specially designed where texts were freely available and one could give rein to one's abilities. So, yeah, that's how I started out as a physiotherapist.
And I guess it would also have been liberating being away from home and family and being a young fellow overseas.
Well, of course, London in the early 60s was just such a great place. The Beatles were just coming on stream. One of the tracks that we might hear later is Cleo Lane and Johnny Dankworth, great jazz musicians. They were very much on the go and did a regular Saturday morning stint on BBC Two. The light program, as it was actually then, but now BBC Two. So it was just a great place. Of course, we didn't have any money. And the other thing that used to happen was that because we were poor, poverty-stricken students, we would get cheap seats at the Albert Hall to go to proms, concerts. I went to the Wigmore Hall, which is a hall where... up-and-coming musicians would play before they made it onto the big stage of the Albert Hall and the Festival Hall. And I heard Jacqueline Dupre, for example, when she was 16, play at the Wigmore Hall. So, yeah, it was just a hugely great time to be in London as a young 20-year-old. Yeah, exciting.
And am I right in thinking that you met Rosemary, your wife, over there?
Quite right. She was my favourite senior student, and I knew that I had to latch onto this girl in order to pass my exam. She knew more than I do because she was a year ahead of me. And so I thought, you know, she was a pretty neat sort of a girl, and I thought, oh well, yeah, she can help me get through these examinations, and so she did. And actually, I guess we were both pretty lucky because she in her year and myself in my year, we scored top of the North London area of all physio students. So we got this prize separately. We got this prize for topping all physio students in the North London area. So yeah,
that's pretty good going.
Yeah. And so she came back we came back to New Zealand in 64 and started our family. Yes.
Right, so where did you come back to? Whereabouts in New Zealand?
Well, we came back to Auckland. I'd gotten a job at Auckland Hospital. Rosemary was busy giving birth to our first daughter. And then we bought a house down in Papakura. And I then moved to Middlemore and worked at Middlemore for 6 years, and then went into private practice in the Papakura Manurewa area, and that's where I spent most of my professional life in the South Auckland area.
Right. Well, just to go back to those days in London, and you mentioned Johnny Dankworth and Cleo Lane. Did you see them live?
Yes, we did. Yes, at the Palladium, I think it was. And subsequently here in Auckland, again, such consummate musicians, those two. You know, every four bars they had a different idea in their music. And it's quite clear that when they work together that they understand one another so thoroughly. Cleo's pitch and timing are just so great, and Johnny Dankworth's arranging I think is just fantastic, because he can cross many genres, like sort of a pop through to jazz. Wonderful musicians, and we've thoroughly enjoyed the live show that they delivered in London, yes.
I'm Jan Scott, your host on Island Life, and we're getting to know Don McKenzie, who's been on the island for how long now, Don?
Well, I'm just a newcomer, really, 12 years. You know, isn't that line just wonderful about something lost and something gained in living life each day? I think that's just such a wonderful line. And you never know what life's going to do for you. And when we came to the island, I came to retire, having been in South Auckland for 43 years. And as soon as I got here, somebody said, oh, do you want a job? And I thought, well, 3 mornings a week would be quite good. And so there I am, still doing something lost and something gained. And that's the way it is. And I guess that's my philosophy, really, is living life each day. Because it reflects really the mystery of life, not in a sort of a totally mystical sense, but in the sense of it, life being just such an awesome and wonderful thing. And I think on this island we're very blessed with having so many riches in our environment and way of life, really.
Yes, indeed. And we do tend to take it for granted sometimes, don't we?
We sure do, and we shouldn't do that, because to live the life we do on this island, you'd have to be a millionaire in most other parts of the world.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, Don, why did you go down the track of being a physiotherapist?
Well, the truth is that there weren't too many options in those days for some kind of money-making career. I knew right from when I was in mid-secondary school that I really wanted to do something with people. I knew that I was sort of, well, that was more where my skills perhaps lay, such as they were, very undiscovered at that time. And so physiotherapy was a profession open at that time to blind people, and I had to struggle to get the scholarship, to win the scholarship to get to London, but I was lucky enough to achieve it, and I don't regret one moment of it. It's a very rewarding career, in as much as you're working with people, often through times of travail in their lives, because of pain or a disability of one kind or another. You learn. It's a gift, really, to be able to work with folk in those kinds of circumstances, because one gets as probably more than you give, actually, from just being with others as they work out their own solutions to the challenges that face them.
Mm, yes, indeed. Well, having been a client of yours a few years ago when I broke my ankle, I can attest to your wonderful healing abilities.
Thank you.
And now, of course, when you won that scholarship to go to London, you not only won a scholarship, but you won the love of your life.
I did.
Or one of the loves of your life.
That's right. Absolutely, I did. And she's been such a great blessing and a help along the way. And we've been blessed with two wonderful children and now six great-grandchildren. And boy, that is just so enriching to have been. I think we've 46 years we've been married now, or something like that.
And it doesn't seem a day too much.
No. It's all still very good.
Yeah. That's great. Now, tell me about one of your interests that I think you've done quite well at too, yachting.
Oh, sailing has been a part of my life. That's true. I'm very much a state house kid. I grew up in Oraki. My mother, we'll go back a little bit. I was born in Hastings, lost my sight. My family had to move to Auckland in order that I could get an education at what was then called the New Zealand Institute for the Blind. And so we got a state house in Oraki, and there were five or six of us living in a two-bedroom state house, so I know what all of that's about. Of course, we were near the sea, and there was nothing like messing about in boats. We'd go down to Okahu Bay and mess about in boats, and my dad bought a yacht, and I learnt to sail with him, and then my brother had yachts, and we'd sail off the Tamaki Yacht Club Saturday afternoon races. And then when I came back to South Auckland, I bought myself a trailer sailor, anchored it up the Clevedon River, and I had a very good mate with whom we went sailing down around these parts, around Waiheke, off to Te Koum and so on. Had some wonderful, wonderful adventures. Lots of stories I could tell you about our sailing adventures. But there's nothing like it, you know, just being in a boat, wind in your hair, listening to the sails, feeling the move of the boat, and just gauging when that boat is in harmony with the elements. And that, to me, is the epitome of achievement, when you've got a boat zinging along and it feels right.
Didn't you compete overseas?
No, I've never competed overseas. The only competition I went to overseas was rowing. I used to row in an eight, and again, this was a student exploit. And every year before the Oxford-Cambridge boat race, they had a race the week before called the Head of the Rivers race. And there were about 300 eights entered in that. And as students, we would enter a race. And I've never worked so hard in my life. But that's the only competition to do with boats that I was in overseas, rowing. Hard work, that rowing, I can tell you.
Right, I bet it was. No, for some reason I had it in my head that you had gone to the States.
Oh, well, now that's true, but only as a supporter. What happened was that the New York Yacht Club ran the World Blind Sailing Championships. Those championships were originally started in 1992 here in Auckland. And every 4 years, the World Blind Sailing Championships have been held. And New Zealand have always done enormously well. But in 2006, the New York Yacht Club ran them at Rhode Island, New York. And so Rosemary and I went up there, but purely as supporters this time. What a wonderful occasion. The New York Yacht Club were just such wonderful hosts, with all the pomp and ceremony that goes with the New York Yacht Club and sailing and all that sort of stuff. But the glory of it was that the New Zealanders cleaned up the rest of the world. 10 teams from around the world, the Kiwis cleaned the lot up. Great.
Absolutely brilliant. I'm having a little difficulty with my microphone here. I'm cutting out every now and then. I'll just hang on to it. That sounds great. Would have been a great experience.
Sure was.
Now, tell me something about your next choice, which is George Shearing's version of Take Five.
Attracted
you to that?
Two things about this. George Shearing is a great blind jazz musician that I've always met, and older people will remember the very unique George Shearing quintet sound, where he had a vibraphone, piano, guitar, bass, and drums in the 50s. That Shearing quintet sound was very common, but this disc is very different. It's Shearing playing with a Dixieland band, but it's just another version of Take Five. Why I was always keen on Take Five was because Brubeck, when Paul Desmond wrote this late 50s, early 60s, it was such an innovation because it was in 5/4 time, and it was just so different from any other jazz that we'd heard. Brubeck was out here in 59, I think it must have been, and we went to that concert and heard that. So Take Five has always been one of my favourite things.
Now, you were telling me during the playing that you do play an instrument.
Well, yeah, that's right. I had my original schooling at the Institute for the Blind, as I said, and there was always a brass band at the Foundation of the Blind. And at age 9, I learned to play the cornet. We would play at the Cenotaph on Anzac Day and the Rose Gardens on Rose Day that's just gone by, and Albert Park some Sunday evenings, and at Mission Bay. So we would do those sort of council stints, and that was a hugely great training for me because, I had to mix with, you know, adults and all that entailed, who were great musicians, some of them, and some of them were jolly hard cases. I learned an awful lot about music and appreciation of music. And of course it was huge memory training because I couldn't read, so we had to learn all of these pieces bar by bar, and that was great memory training. So brass banding, and then as I moved into my own sort of adolescence and so on, I played in dance bands as well. I was never really brilliant. I don't think I'm a fantastically talented musician, but I always did enjoy playing, and of course it teaches you an enormous about a lot about managing an instrument, appreciating what goes into orchestrations and so on. So that was a huge gift to be part of that musical scene. In fact, on this next track that I hope we've got time to hear, we'll hear Malcolm McNeil, but this is track is arranged by Julian Lee. Now, Julian Lee, for those who go back a bit, will know Julian as a fantastic blind pianist and musician who has done a lot of arranging for some of the finest musicians around the world, for Capitol Records, Sinatra, and so on. He's done a lot of arranging. He currently lives in Sydney. He's well into his 80s now, no longer working, but it was Julian who had taught me to get my first note out of a cornet.
Yes, I had the pleasure of meeting him many years ago when I was working in the record industry, and I remember taking some music around to his house, and the his studio was just like a library of music, and, you know, well, it was LPs in those days, of course, and all meticulously documented, and he knew exactly where to find whatever it was he wanted. It was absolutely amazing.
And he was an incredible, because I saw him working sometimes in arranging in small groups, and he would say, and this was in orchestral stuff, and he would say, I just want the second violins now to quieten down, and if the bass could just come in just ahead of the beat, and so on. He had it all in his head. He was just amazing.
Absolutely. Well, we've been getting to know Don McKenzie this morning. Don is a physiotherapist on the island and a new member of the local board. And thank you very much, Don, for coming in.
You're listening to Island Life, Waiheke people, events and issues, brought to you by Island, art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac, Ocean View Road, Onirua.
Marta Fish has come in to talk to us about the parenting workshop that Living Without Violence is going to run on the 17th and 18th of November. Welcome, Marta.
Hello, Jan. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. Now, can you tell us something about the workshop? Well, let's start off by telling us something about the Living Without Violence.
Living Without Violence is part of a national organization that aims to educate families about practicing nonviolence in the home.
Right, and you run workshops at various times of the year to help with that?
Living Without Violence runs workshops throughout the year for adults and children, for men, workshops for men, workshops for women, and then workshops just for children. And then this parenting workshop that Hazel May is running and that she's asked me to participate in has been funded through Living Without Violence. And this is specifically for teens 11 to 16.
And what format will that workshop take?
We've already had 3 weeks of it, and so next week is our last week, dealing with specific topics from consequences, development, communication, physiological changes in teens that one should expect and how to help them through it.
Right. And how long have you been involved with the group?
I've been a member of Living Without Violence for probably 10 years, and Hazel May has been involved for probably close to that.
Right. Has that group been going on the island for that long?
I think, I'm not one of the core people in it. I'm a member, but I think it's been going on for about maybe 17 years here.
Right. And your involvement is as what? What are you doing with the group?
With the parenting workshop, I'm parenting clinic, which is free for all parents of children 11 through 16 or 17. Hazel and I and other guest presenters are offering tips to parents and also giving parents an opportunity to talk with each other about shared experiences and shared solutions.
This workshop, is there a charge for it?
No, it's absolutely free. It's being funded by the Ministry of Social Development.
Oh, that's great. And whereabouts will it be held?
Well, we're offering both a daytime and a nighttime clinic to suit parents' needs. So on Wednesday the 17th, it will be from 10 to 12 at the Red Cross building upstairs. And then Thursday the 18th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Surfdale Hall.
That's great because it will allow parents who commute perhaps to take part on their way home from work.
Mm, precisely.
That's a great idea. Marty, you've been on the island for a while, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
How long have you been living here?
17 years.
Right. And what brought you to Waiheke?
Yeah. The opportunity for a car-free lifestyle.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, that I could commute to Auckland and not have to own a car.
Mm, that's a great great aspire to. Not all of us manage it, unfortunately.
People might see me around on my electric bike, my Whisper bike that I bought through James Samuel.
Oh, wow. That sounds a great idea.
It's awesome. Yeah. It's the best of both worlds.
Yeah. Yeah. How long does it run for before you have to fire it up again?
I think it goes for about 30 kilometers.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. It costs about 7 cents to recharge. Can't beat it.
Absolutely not.
Fresh air, get to see the birds close up.
Yeah. Yeah. So what attracted you to get involved with the Living Without Violence group?
I'm a practicing psychotherapist, counselor, and I work with individuals, couples, and families, and I really admire their approach because it's about respect between the genders and respect between parents and children, and primarily respect for oneself, because all of that comes once we respect and love ourselves.
Yeah, and that's not an easy thing for some people, is it?
No, especially if they've been raised in a family in which there wasn't respect modeled nor respect shared, and then definitely in families where there was violence, either physical or emotional.
Mm. Yeah, it's trying to break that cycle, isn't it?
Precisely, and that's such a joy that we have at Living Without Violence, and then in my private practice and the work that Hazel does at the Ha'ora. She works with families with children from 0 to 17. That's also free service. And we just get to break the cycle. And so many clients say to me, I'm never going to do what my parents did, and now I have the tools to parent in a different way or to be partnered in a different way.
That sounds great. And, of course, being on the island, you would be aware of the outcomes from your work, because I guess in town people would wander off to a different area. They might move, and you never know how successful you've been. Mm-hmm. Whereas perhaps here you've got more of an understanding of the impact that has on them.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, that's great. What other... workshops might be coming up in this.
I just offered a workshop, an introduction to nonviolent communication, a couple of weeks ago, and that was really well attended and well received. And the exciting part for me that I'm going to be presenting on next Wednesday and Thursday at the parenting clinic is how to use nonviolent communication with our children. And the principles of that are basically authenticity, freedom, choice, and self-responsibility. The idea that whatever we feel, we create that feeling inside ourselves. It's not what someone else has done to us or made us feel. And there's a wonderful sense of empowerment and freedom that comes from that. And people don't fight us when we come from a place like that, because we're taking responsibility for ourselves. We're not attacking or criticizing. And nonviolent communication was created by Marshall Rosenberg about 40 years ago. Who, one of the many pithy things he said was, any criticism or blame is a tragic expression of an unmet need.
That's very true, isn't it? Mm.
So when we can see through, when let's say we're on the receiving end of a criticism or blame or attack, if we can see through that to the suffering and the unmet needs of the person saying that, then we can step out of the tit for tat. We can step out of the eye for eye thing that's perpetuated in throughout society. And I'm just so excited about teaching it to people, and of course using it myself, because it's a way to be respectful and peaceful in a true way.
Absolutely. Have you noticed a difference in attitude by parents to children over the last 2 or 3 years?
2 or 3?
Well, I'm thinking particularly whether the anti-smacking law, as they called it, has had an impact.
I haven't noticed anything. If anything, it surprised me how many parents have almost said... parents are trying to find a way to retain some sense of being the head of the household without using force. And I think that we need to provide them with ways to lead and guide and be forceful, but not using force. You know, forceful in a way that's respectful and makes sense in the context of the family relationships.
Without the bullying side of it.
Right. And I do want to say, I think that it's really important, because on the island we have a lot of blended families. And some people say to me, well, what if I start practicing this nonviolent communication at home? What if my ex-partner doesn't do it in their home? And it really, it doesn't matter. Children are able to see and appreciate that what happens in one home doesn't have to be identical to another home. So you don't have to feel like you have to convert your ex-partner to it. Because I think that the anti-smacking law has stirred people up, but I think there's a lot of historical trauma that parents today have experienced themselves as children from... It's not necessarily just the smacking, but the context in which it's done. Smacking that say has been clearly done with the intention of, I want to teach you a lesson. And this is coming out of a loving place and a guiding place. My experience of adults who were treated like that as children is very different from those whose parents indiscriminately or in an alcoholic haze beat them. And so I think there's a difference there.
Yes, there is. But I guess it would be difficult to get to or to change the habits of those who have got an alcohol problem or a drug problem. Do you find that, or does this program waken up their ideas?
This is not an addiction program. No, I mean, it's for anyone and everyone. However, addictions require a certain type of treatment.
Right, yeah. It's interesting to me that parenting is the most important career that any of us can have, and yet we have no training for it whatsoever. Mm. We're tossed in the deep end and expected to get on with it. And up until fairly recently, there really wasn't a lot of places you could go to for help. Or just say, am I doing it right? You might be doing it right, but just to know whether you are or not is...
I love letting parents know what they are doing that's helpful for their family. I think there's so much. We've almost gone in the other direction with where there's so much criticism of parenting and so much TV shows and books that are picking apart parenting that a lot of parents are walking around feeling guilty, and that doesn't help parenting at all. I think. By and large, the huge majority of parents love their kids, have a good intuition about how to parent, and just need to do some fine-tuning on the edges. And that's a lot of what Hazel and I do. And the Living Without Violence programs are fantastic because it allows, let's say, the groups that are just for women, it allows them a chance to resource themselves. And the groups that are just for men, it allows them a chance to see that they're actually living in a whole society that condones and perpetuates patriarchy and violence against women, and to not see themselves as isolated social atoms, but instead part of a whole social milieu that's formed us since we were tiny, since before we could put words to it.
I guess it's important for people to realize that going to a workshop like this doesn't brand them as being child abusers or bullies or anything of that sort. It merely gives an opportunity to get some pointers and to share experiences. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yes, and a lot of it's about education as well.
So there's no need to feel intimidated if you go along to the meeting.
I don't think so, and I think Hazel and I quickly help people feel comfortable and confident.
That's great. That's absolutely great. Now, the Living Without Violence group is doing this parent... where are we? What is it called?
Clinic.
Parent clinic.
Mm-hmm.
There are two of them. Wednesday the 17th of November from 10 a.m. to midday at the Red Cross building in Onirua, and the second one the day after on the Thursday the 18th, which is this coming week, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the Surfdale Hall. So if you're commuting and you can't get along to the daytime one on the Wednesday, you can get along to the Thursday evening one at the Surfdale Hall. Thank you very much for coming in, Marta. That's been very helpful.
Thank you,
and
Jan.
Good luck with your projects.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life, our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. Island Life is brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, and the interviews are replayed on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock. They're also available as a download from our website, www.waihekeradio.org.nz. Island Life is brought to you by Island, the shop with Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Island, Ocean View Road, Onirua.